So good evening and good morning, those of you joining us from elsewhere in the world, and welcome to this Dance Dialogues conversation with Caroline Bowditch and Luke Pell. I'd like to begin by acknowledging that we're gathered on and are sending out today's talk from the unceded lands of the people of the Kulin Nation. And I want to pay my deep respects to their elders past, present, and emerging, and extend this to any First Nations or other Indigenous people joining us today. So my name is Tom Pritchard, and I'm the studio program producer here at Lucy Guerin Inc. I'm a white cis man in my mid-30s with short brown hair and a beard. I'm wearing a blue shirt with a light pink t-shirt underneath and black trousers. And tonight I'm here in Studio One of WXYZ Studios in North Melbourne, which is a large white-walled space with grey floors. There are a few reasons why we're very excited about tonight's talk. Firstly, because of our wonderful guests, Caroline and Luke. Secondly, because through the wonders of technology, we're bringing this talk about dance and practice and art making across the world live. And finally, because this is the first talk that we presented simultaneously here in the studio with a live in-person audience, as well as one via joining us via Zoom. So given this is our first run out in this format, please be patient with us in case we take any unexpected detours along the way. So on to tonight's talk. We're delighted to welcome Caroline here and Luke from a very early morning UK in a conversation exploring what practice and art making is now. And by way of offering some reintroductions, I'd like to offer a brief summary the artists supplied about their connection and professional relationship. Long-term companions in practice, Caroline Bowditch and Luke Pell, have worked in dance, performance, and choreography for around 50 years collectively. They are makers, performers, advocates, and art activists. Their artistic works range from epic to the intimate, work for outdoors, for theatres, and unexpected spaces, for children and early years, with intergenerational ensembles, for cabarets and nightclub spaces. They first met in parallel roles when Caroline was dance agent for change with Scottish Dance Theatre, and Luke was head of learning and research for Kanduko Dance Company. Since then, they have collaborated on both their respective artistic works and in hosting spaces of development for other disabled and LGBTQIA plus artists. At the heart of what they do is always conversation, questioning, and love. Caroline is CEO of Arts Access Victoria, and Luke works internationally as a maker, curator, and dramaturg. In this conversation, they will talk a little bit about the synergy between them, their approaches and perspectives, and why they believe dance, choreography, and performance are so important, especially in this now and our unimagined tomorrows. And with that, welcome Caroline, welcome Luke, over to you.
Thank you so much. Hi everyone, it's lovely to be in a space with you. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning, Caroline. Hello everybody that I can't see off screen, but I'm waving at you.
Yeah, I was going to make that point, actually, that Luke can't actually see you guys in the space. Only I get that joy. So I am faced with a group of lovely people in the room with me, which is really joyous. I want to begin by extending Tom's acknowledgement of country. I live and work on Boomerang lands. I live in St Kilda, and Arts Access Victoria is based in South Melbourne. But originally I come from Yorta Yorta country, so up in the northeast is where I was born. And I just also I want to acknowledge the traditional owners of all of those lands and pay my respects to their ongoing traditions and wisdom that they continue to share with us so generously. I also want to acknowledge any disabled colleagues that might be in the room with us or online. It feels yeah, important that we also acknowledge those things. And also those, I want to acknowledge those people that can't be with us for either access or any other reason. I'm going to hand over to you in a sec, Luke. I'll do, for audio description purposes, I am a short, as in 3'4", short, white woman with an asymmetric blonde curly hairdo, wearing a mustard spotty t-shirt and navy blue jeans that I'm proud to say I made myself, sewed it on a sewing machine. And I'm currently wearing some very fancy black slippers with sparkly things on because I broke my leg just over a week ago. So I'm justifying wearing slippers by the fact that I have a broken leg with me. So enough about me. Let's talk about Luke.
Thanks, Caroline. Good morning, everybody. My name is Luke Pell. My name, Luke. I am in my one of the two rooms that I live in Leith, in Edinburgh. Leith is a part of Edinburgh that used to exist in its own, as its own entity, and then was consumed into the capital. But I live in what was a very old workers' cottage in Leith. And it is now 8:08 this morning, so the sun is slowly coming up here, and it's a pleasure to begin my day with you. I am quite a long person. I use the pronouns he, him, and they, them. I'm a cisgendered white man. I have not much of a beard, but a little bit of fluff around my chin. I'm wearing some big honey-coloured glasses, a lavender jumper, and I have wrapped around my neck a soft grey cashmere scarf. You can't see the lower half of me, but I'm wearing some long grey trousers. And also because I'm at home, I'm wearing my slippers. And in Scotland, it's still quite cold. So I also have some big thermal socks on. In the background of my screen, you can see some books and some pictures, and there's a lamp dangling.
Great. So as a way of beginning, Tom obviously gave us a really lovely introduction about how Luke and my work have intermingled over many, many years. And we've worked on many projects together. But I wanted to, the last time Luke and I were physically together was actually in this space. So we were in this space together, leading a week-long residency called Being Enough. That was the topic. And I invited Luke to come and co-facilitate it with me because I kept meeting artists in lots of different spaces who would talk about, particularly if they hadn't had a hidden disability, not being disabled enough to be in that space, or people who were maybe being gender fluid or questioning their gender and all sorts of things, and they would say, I'm not queer enough, or I'm not gay enough, or I'm not enough of something. And it really made me think there was a conversation that Luke and I needed to have with a group of people, which we spent a week having. And I remember as part of that being introduced to an exercise about, I remember, by an artist called Dasha Tan, who very generously led us through the process.
So we're going to rewind a little back to, a little bit back to the beginning of us meeting. So I remember 6 or 7 years of us, Caroline and I, sitting together in rooms on panels, or across from one another in rooms on panels, or in workshops on projects about moving bodies below the waterline, about curiosity, challenge, change, about rethinking, reflecting, restocking, building on pathways to the profession. And each time at the end of a session, Caroline and I would say, do you feel like we're just having the same conversation again? And a desire to build on that conversation. And in preparation for today, we were thinking a little bit about the fact that for about 6 or 7 years, whilst I worked with Kanduka Dance Company as head of learning and research, and Caroline was dance agent for change with Scottish Dance Theatre, that we were in conversations that were very much about being included in what already existed, in ideas of how dance should be, that were made and led by certain kinds of bodies and certain kinds of ways of being in the world, which were not the ways that we and many of our peers experienced the world.
I remember that very well. I also remember an event that you facilitated at the South Bank in London. And it was, I think it was instigated by, was it instigated by Kanduka or was it instigated by you?
Probably Kanduka if it was at the South Bank.
And I remember, because I was living in Scotland and being an artist and a performer and all those sorts of things, and I remember for the first time ever thinking, I'm not sure that I can really call myself a disabled artist anymore because I'm not experiencing any barriers as an artist living in Scotland. And because I had access to studios and I had access to funding and I had access to performance platforms, and I started to think the barriers were dissolving and disability would always be part of my identity, but in terms of the social model of disability, which acknowledges that we are more or less disabled by the environment that we're in, I remember thinking, maybe I'm not being disabled by this artistic environment in Scotland. Maybe it's allowing me to do all sorts of amazing things. And that was quite shocking for lots of people in the room and for myself on reflection. And it was momentary. It was a momentary thought and a momentary experience. So, yeah.
That's so exciting to me that in that moment, or a little bit over that past year, having been in Scotland, working with Caroline on her performance, Falling in Love with Frida, and having attended an event called Pathways to the Profession, which was sort of the culmination of Caroline's time with Scottish Dance Theatre, Dance Theatre for Change, I decided to move to Scotland because I thought, I want to be in that community. I want to be amongst those artists where different aesthetics, different ways of being are welcomed and understood, and that we as a community are advocating for and practicing that shift in who is involved in making dance and what dance can look like. And so, yeah, I moved here about 8 years ago, whilst Caroline and Tom were in fact both still here, and not long after they left. And I hope it wasn't to do with me moving. But what I remember next is 7 years of Caroline, you and I making, performing, creating, of us exploring our artistic voices and the artistic voices of the artists, performers, dancers that we worked with. I remember Watermelons and Mattresses and Leaving, Limbo, Landing. I remember Libraries and In the Ink Dark. I remember Loss, I remember Language, I remember Private Dances, Private Parties. I remember performing in our underwear and in leg warmers, in pubs and clubs, in fields and theatres, and always at the heart the poetry of different bodies. And I remember feeling like this was a next wave for each of us in the ways that we wanted to attempt to shift who we understand as being critical to the dances that we see and feel in the world.
Yeah. I remember writing you a love letter every day for a week when I was making Falling in Love with Frida, which was a piece that I made about my love or my interest in Frida Kahlo, who was a very famous Mexican painter. And but she also lived with disability for her whole life, and that's not the thing that she was necessarily remembered for. So I wanted to reclaim her as a disabled artist. So I made a piece called Falling in Love with Frida, and Luke was involved in the project as my text advisor. So in developing the script for the show, because it had lots of text as well as lots of dancing, Luke asked me to write him a love letter every day of everything that I knew about Frida. So every day I would spend 10 minutes just writing lists of what I knew about Frida, and then I would send them to Luke. And then because he's magical, he put all of those amazing things into this, the thing that essentially became the script for the show. But I remember how amazing that was as a process, and how, yeah, how brilliant it was and still is to say those words. We toured that show for 3 years and performed it 93 times in 6 countries, and it's amazing. And the cast continue to talk about when we're going to bring it back. When are you going to bring it back? So we're still trying to think about that.
I remember one of the things that came out of those letters, which were a joy to open every morning. Caroline's a very early riser, if people didn't know this. She's usually up before everybody else. So I'd open my laptop and the first thing I'd find would be Caroline. And in these letters were somehow butterflies came up, and this analogy of the butterfly almost as a sort of became part of the dramaturgy of the work, this unfurling from chrysalis into another form. And that makes me think a little bit about how then butterflies carried forward into your next work, Sniggle. And what I wanted to, what I was thinking about is the way that your touch and your practice has moved between very different contexts and generations. I think we both do that in our practice. So you went from making this work about Frida, falling in love with Frida, your own experiences of love, loving your body, loving the people around you, other kinds of lovers who we fall in love with, to your love of children and young people. And I was just wondering, I've never asked you this question, but if you could talk a little about that shift, what it was like to go from Frida to Sniggle.
Yeah. So Frida, we serve a shot of tequila to every audience member within the first 2 minutes of the show. We always have a non-alcoholic option. And there's quite a lot of adult talk in the show, and lots of watermelon eating. But one of the most important things about Frida was that it was never for more than 100 people, and I wanted to have eye contact with every one of those audience members. So it was really important that people came and felt seen by me, seen. It never went dark. They were very close. They were on three sides of the audience. And I think when we started to make Sniggle, there was something about these tiny people. So Laura, my partner Laura, who's in the room, was the co-creator of two pieces that we made, one called The Adventures of Sniggle, and the other one was called Sniggle and Friends. And Sniggle and Friends is where the butterfly is. And was played by the brilliant Welly O'Brien. And again, it was about seeing the audience, them being very present and influencing what was happening on stage, reflecting their sounds. And it was about them being close, about sometimes we talk about the fourth wall, you know, that thing where it's like we pretend we can't see them. I don't do that very well. So, there was definitely no fourth wall. And I think the themes for me are still about the being seen, the being noticed, the importance, feeling important being there. And they always, I would say most of my work is about love.
Which I think is something that we both share, that love and radical love is always at the heart of what we do. I think also this, another synergy that you just described is that I don't think either of us have really ever, other than when working with others, made work that has this fourth wall aspect. We both make work where the folk who are experiencing the work are with the performers in shared space, where we see each other being seen. Seeing and being seen is so important, and also touch, being close, being intimate, feeling the touch of one another. And I think that's something that has been with me a lot over the past year. And as we move forward, I know that, you know, in Australia you're in quite a different place to where we are in Scotland in terms of restrictions and lockdown, but as somebody who has always made work that is intimate, that is close, where you can feel the sweat, the scent of a dancer, where we can touch one another, I have found myself spending quite a lot of time over the past year thinking about how do I reorient what I do, how do I still advocate for careful touch, for being with one another, whilst also staying safe and recognizing the world that we find ourselves in now. You and I have been talking a little bit about the fact that many of us who live have lived experience of being marginalized people navigate precarity as part of our daily lives and have the tools for this. And I was just remembering, when we were talking about remembering, the sort of the last thing that we did before we were together, before we were not together, in 2019, we were in Malmo with a huge group of disabled artists for a project called Unexpected Bodies in Unexpected Spaces. And then I came to Melbourne, and as you say, we were in the studios there, hosting this residency space being enough. And with all of those artists, we were talking about people being experts of themselves. I was sort of tracing back this thread of, in the time that I worked with Canduco, often we were advocating for inclusion into what had already existed. And that shift that I feel very much in my practice about working with artists around the fact that the expertise they have is their expertise, that they are the experts of their self, of their disability, of their gender, of their sexuality, and what that touch brings to the world. And I was curious how you're feeling about those sorts of things now, Caroline, as we begin to, as you begin to open up in Australia.
Yeah, I think it's a really big thing for us, isn't it, at the moment, to how do we go back into a studio together? How do we work together in that physical space? Where is people's confidence? And one of the things that we know from the research that's being done at the moment is that in Australia, as our audience numbers increase, the comfort level of the disability community decreases. So our drive to go back to normal is actually a lot, well, it's, I suppose it's making people retreat again in a way that they haven't. And I think there was a different sense of, well, I was going to say that there was a sense of equalization, I suppose, that happened during COVID, because we know that there's lots of people who live in isolation all the time for whatever reason. And for many of us during this pandemic, it was the first time that people got a taste of that. And I think people they want to get out of that. So there is something really interesting for me about what happens if getting out of it isn't an option for you. How do we stay connected to those people? And I think one of the questions that has come up for us is about what are the dances in these bodies right now? So what's the new dances that have come out? What's the dances that we can do as a solo body? What's the wisdom that we gained in that kind of isolation? And how is it affecting the dances that we do now? Are they different or are they the same as they were before? Have we gone back to those familiar patterns or have we developed some new ones? And I think I'm really interested in what are the dances of now and what are the dances that these bodies do now?
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting, isn't it, because there's been so much talk about a return to normal, and of course normal never was for so many of us. There's so many people who lived and have lived in the ways that people have been living for the past couple of years for their whole lives. There's also been so much talk, and there's been wonderful things which have happened in terms of access, the spaces that we can be in, that people can show up in, can participate in. But also that's not a one size fits all answer. And so I think we've been talking a little bit about, like, how do we hold open multiple possibilities? You know, the fact that we can have these online spaces, it's interesting, but today is online and in person. Where are the places that these converge? And how do we utilize the skills and the knowledge that we have to speak to all of those kinds of spaces? I think I'm just about to begin with two organizations here in Scotland, one called Imaginate, you know both of these organizations, Caroline. Imaginate, which is the children's festival and development organization, and the Workroom, which is a membership dance organization, working with 30 artists about navigating the now. What is the work that I make now? How do I make work now? We're going to go through a peer-led process over the next 3 months. And we're beginning that process by asking the question of, what's at the heart of my art? What do I do? And what's the compass for my art? What are my guiding principles? And how do I begin to think about what things might need to shift in the world as it unfolds now? Because as we know, this is with us for the ongoing.
Luke, I don't know if you heard it, but there was a big crash in the background, which no one seems alarmed about, so that's a good thing. It's just a sign. It's fine. It's not a sign. Okay. Could be a sign. I don't know. Is it a sign? I don't know. Yeah, interesting. I, as you know, I made two works during lockdown. One, I hadn't made any work since I got back to Australia. So I'd been in the job for two and a half years. And I hadn't made any work. And I was invited to make a short solo as part of the Seniors Festival. Not that I'm quite a senior yet, but I'm fast approaching it. And I made a solo on the pier at St Kilda with a mask on, and it was amazing, to a piece of music that was written by a very dear friend of ours. And I listened to it and all of a sudden I was like, I want to choreograph something to that. And I hadn't had that feeling for 2 years. It was quite amazing. And it was, yeah, it was really interesting to see that process. Laura filmed it on my phone, like there was nothing high tech about it, and it really reminded me how easy it is to make work that can be presented online if we feel we have the permission or we're given the platforms or the invitation to do it, which was really interesting. And the other piece that I have been making is I made a solo work on a dancer that's based just outside of Belfast in Northern Ireland, which involved some very early mornings and some very late nights for her. But we made a piece. And the really interesting thing is that piece was not made for screen. It wasn't made in a studio. But it was made and worked because it had been made over Zoom. So I didn't have the option of anything other than what I could see on my screen. That was a really interesting process because, again, so much of it was about the conversations that Linda and I had. so much of it was about what sat behind the dances, not just what were the dances, but what was leading the dances, and also what was the dance that she needed to do in lockdown. What was the dance that she needed to do at that time?
Can I ask you, Caroline, you can't, of course, speak for Linda, but you probably can share as choreographer what the dance that she needed to do was. But I'm curious to ask you first, what was the dance that you, when you were invited by the Elders Festival to make a dance, when you were making that dance, what did you, what was the dance that you needed to do in that moment?
I needed to, in a way, like if you see that it's very floaty, it's a very floaty dance. I was in the outside, so I was in the air, and there was something about, I suppose, in it, and there was lots of sky and the sea was behind me. And so I suppose in a way it felt very freeing because we'd been so locked up. And we literally filmed it in 15 minutes, but it was, I suppose in a way there was something about the significance of the everyday freedom that was taken from us in that time, and us, me really recognizing what it is to be able to feel the wind in my face and see the sea and smell the sea. And I think it was about freedom and being present to the elements around me.
When you describe that, it makes me think so much about our relationship with the more than human, with everything else that we are, that we need to be with, and our attention to that, and how much we've missed it, or many of us have missed it. And what was the dance that that Linda needed to do?
So Linda, the dance that Linda and I made is called Armor Off, and it sort of loosely linked in a way, I suppose, to the work that you and I both worked on, I think, with the fabulous Janice Parker, who's also an Edinburgh-based artist, who made a piece called Private Dancer. And I suppose with Linda, our conversations were about the masking that as people with visible disabilities we do in order to survive in the world, and the fact that what are the dances that she could do without having to have her armor on because she was in her home. And mm-hmm. So her dances were different. She didn't have to mask. There was no judgment. And so the dances that emerged were different. And there was something profoundly beautiful about that.
You talking about that has reminded me of the first time I met Janice Parker, who you just described, who's a dear friend and colleague of both of ours, and a huge influence in terms of somebody whose knowledge has been present in our community for so long and has shifted things in a very quiet, gentle, subtle and radical ways. But yeah. That in this work, Private Dancer, that she and the artist Richard Lazell created little rooms where different disabled performers, different performers performed, invited you into their spaces. And the dance that was possible in that space was maybe quite different to when they were, if they were invited to perform in a space that's governed by other people's ideals. I think Tom was also one of the performers in that work. And I remember experiencing that work when I came to Scotland and being so deeply moved by these intimate encounters and the generosity. And I, you saying that makes me think about the possibility of the spaces that we might be able to be invited into now, and the spaces where that we might look to for performance that are not those that we have always imagined we might encounter performance in.
Yeah.
And that sort of brings me to this thinking of, we're talking a little bit about how do we hold different possibilities open now? So it's not just one way, like a rush to return or everything's online, but how do we have a myriad of opportunities? And coming back to this data that you were sharing, which of course there's a kind of fiscal drive, isn't there, when we think about people returning to the theatre. And I'm wondering where you are CEO of Arts Access, it sounds from the conversations we've been having that you're beginning to think about some of these things already.
Yeah, so we, in collaboration with an amazing arts manager, just incredible human called Kate Larson, and Kate and I developed a series of guidelines for people return. How do we return to the world so that we can maintain as much of the access that's being generated in this time? And lots of the conversations that I'm having at the moment is, how do we maintain this? How do we allow ourselves to be in two places at once, literally? How do we maintain that in a way that feels effective and affecting in the ways that live performance used to? And so the first kind of guideline is about, don't ditch the digital. Like, we need to remain in a digital space as well as being able to be live together. And so this is fascinating. This is like a bit of an experiment in terms of, how does it feel? How is it to be in two places at once? So there are a lot of the conversations that I'm having with people at the moment is, you ran a whole festival online last year. What of that are you going to keep? How much of your access budget that you've got are you allocating to your digital kind of presence and online, what you're going to keep doing? So, yeah, they're the conversations that I'm having.
Mm-hmm. And that sounds like one of the, or a first of, we talked a little bit earlier about what are the things that we might hope for going forward, and that sounds like one thing you might hope for. Are there other things that you are hoping for as we move forward into a kind of next wave of, if I think about the different periods of time we've spent together in this next phase while we can't be together, but as companions in practice, what are you looking forward to?
Before we launch forward, I would love to ask the same question of you, because your work is incredibly intimate and is so much about being in a space with bodies, thinking about the work that you've done in libraries, thinking about the work that you've done sitting, gathering stories from people sitting on park benches, taking people on walks through landscape. Like, how do you envisage your work or the work that you're going to do moving forward?
Yeah, it's been interesting, the question of what's the dance this body does now, particularly when those things have been sort of cornerstones of my work about being with people in space. And you and I've had this conversation in a sort of ongoing way that whilst digital has brought many wonderful things for many people in terms of access, it prompted a kind of formal diagnosis for dyspraxia, dyscalculia and dysgraphia for me, because I'm struggling so much with digital, the way I'm wired. I stall quite a lot. So for me, it's not super accessible. And it's really helped me to reflect on the fact that being in live space and touch is really critical to how I understand other people in the world around me. But I've been taking time with that. And funny enough, this week I have sent out something close to 100 artworks or offers in envelopes through different projects that I'm working on. So one is a correspondence course called Queer by Extension. And my module is called In a Quiet Queering, but that's a beginning of thinking of how can I have a dialogue with people that involves the tactile. And it's I guess, mixed media. There's digital interaction, but there's also people receiving things in the post to me and sending them back. And in some ways, for me, this begins to be a little bit like an intimate one-to-one. I also have an ongoing collaboration with the artist, filmmaker and writer, Lucy Cash, who actually is in Sydney at the moment and sort of has got stuck there during lockdown. Mm-hmm. And so we began a project that we're now having to work across time zones, but also that's in the north of Scotland. And again, we're making offers by correspondence, these tiny choreographies that fold out for people to hold. So I'm thinking a lot about how I can still have that sense of touch with people and kind of return a little bit to the analog and where the analog and the digital might meet. In many ways, I also feel like a lot of the stuff that I've been up to in my practice probably has resonance now. You know, I used to do lots of walking encounters with people or encounters in outdoor spaces. It hasn't felt safe. You know, we're in a different level of restriction at the moment, but I hope that actually some of what I did kind of has a, I can just carry forward. I think the last thing that sort of is with me that we've talked a little bit about is that I made this whole series of work for libraries, which were a project called In the Ink Dark, which is sort of how do we find language for loss and talking to people about things that they've loved and lost. And it feels so apparent to me that globally, there is this incredible cumulative grief that we have that's, you know, come over the past years across many different experiences, and we need to metabolize that. And I think dance and live performance are really fundamental to how we metabolize some of what's happened over the past year, how we come back together carefully, and that can be across media. But asking these questions and having these conversations, I think, is a beginning.
Great. So sorry to your question to me, question again was about my hopes for the future.
Yeah, going forward.
And they are about being able to maintain, to refine and maintain these hybrid spaces where everyone, where no one is left behind. And I think that's a real challenge, because that's the other thing that we saw really appear last year was this incredible digital inequity. So we, particularly at AAV, where we run 10 studios a week, all of which are in real life with people, and all of a sudden we had to take everything online. And for lots of the people that we work with, they didn't have access to technology or necessarily had the digital skills, or may have been living in a shared accommodation with a gatekeeper who wouldn't give them access to equipment that they might have had. And that's really hard. So for some people, a lot opened. And then on this, the other end of the spectrum was this incredible, the digital divide that we've heard lots of people talk about. So I think my ambition moving forward is how do we move in, keep, maintain a hybrid space and ensure that no one is left behind. What about you? What are your hopes going forward?
I think we need tools and better tools to be with what's tender. And I think that knowledge is already here in communities who've, as I said earlier, you know, who've navigated precarity their whole lives. And I think therefore for me, part of my desire or hope is who are the people that are leading and shaping the ways that we go forward? So people like yourself. I was very excited to see recently that our friend and colleague Dan Dorr has been appointed as Associate Director at Canduco Dance Company. So who are the voices that are shaping how we go forward, I think, is something that I really hope for. And that we can return to hope, because there's also been, and how we spend time returning to hope. I've fallen in love, falling in love with Frida. I have fallen in love recently with this word that I discovered called respair, which is R-E-S-P-A-I-R. And it kind of fell out of the English language, but it means a return to hope. And I feel like that's really what I want to focus on over the next years. A return to hope, and who are the voices that are leading us?
Yeah, great. That's a hopeful future.
And on that, if we can jump to some audience questions potentially. So we haven't had any from our online audience, so please feel free to jump in. If you are online, just open up that Q&A part. Pop your questions in there. So I just wanted to turn to our studio audience and ask if anyone had any questions. And if you don't, then we'll start to endure the questions that I've got. So Let's save the artist and ask questions from you.
Hi.
For you,
Caroline. Yes.
Did you have any struggles in your past life before you became a dancer?
So the question, just so that everyone online can hear the question, I'm going to repeat it. So your question was, did I have any struggles in my life before I became a dancer? That's a really long time ago now. I'm sure I did. I probably had some fairly horrible moments at school. Yeah, but I think finding dance, coming to dance, was a massive shifting place for me because it was the first time in my life that I had landed in my skin, and I was given the chance to find out what this body that I'd grown up thinking was strange and awkward was actually capable of, and that was what it could do rather than what it couldn't do. And I think just knowing that made lots of those other struggles just fall away, because I kind of, yeah, I landed and kind of went, oh, okay, I'm not weird. This is okay. And I can do all these amazing things. So, yeah. But I came to dance really late. I was 26 when I first really started dancing, I would say. And in dancer world, that's quite late. So, yeah. In my life, have I been bullied in my life? At school, yes, a lot. But less, I think as I've got older, that I've become better at I was going to say caring, but maybe it's more about having a different message in my head, so listening less to the bullies and actually being true to me and speaking my truth, I suppose. Yeah.
Okay. And I have a question for you, Luke.
So, Luke, question coming to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
When you said before that you were struggling as far as the digital world goes, I'm struggling too as well. Mm-hmm. So I just want to hear from your perspective. Since you are struggling then, are you struggling now?
As far as that goes. Brilliant. Did you hear that, Luke, or do you want me to repeat that?
Could you repeat, please?
Yes, of course.
Sure that I heard properly.
The question was about, you mentioned the fact that you're struggling to be online because of the new things that you've learnt recently.
Yeah.
The question is, are you still struggling now, or have you started to, I'm going to expand a bit, but have you got some new techniques and things that are working because you also struggle with this digital world sometimes?
Yeah, great. Sorry, can I ask the name of the person who's asking?
Yeah, my name is Jamie.
Hi, Jamie. One of the things that's been super helpful is that I've spent most of my working life working in the disability community, and I have friends who have given me so much information about choice. The choices that we make for ourselves and asking for what we need. There's an artist based in the UK who, in Scotland, that Caroline as well, called Abby Watson, who has shared lots and lots of her research with me around neurodivergence, which has been incredibly helpful. She's been so generous, and it's such a gift to have peers. So going to my peers has really helped. But I think the thing that has become clearer for me over the past few months is that I have a choice. So for example, there's such a demand right now to be, or the culture we live in, to be present on social media platforms, on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, or online in a Zoom conversation. And I can feel quite overwhelmed by all of that. So I've made some choices to only be on certain ones, to kind of go, actually, I can stay connected, but I can stay connected in ways that work for me. I've started being more explicit with people about how much time I can spend on screen, and quite tough with myself. So I know that I can probably do one, maybe two meetings like this in a week. If I have to do a bigger meeting, then I have to kind of schedule my time differently. But letting people know that and not beating myself up about it. But in that, because so much connection is happening digitally, I've been going back to the analog of like calling people on the phone and listening to people's voices, of writing very old friends postcards, finding other ways to be in touch. And this is a big question that I think has come and that I'm sort of placing in the center of my practice right now, is about a colleague of mine in Berlin talked about being an artist as being the way that the world touches you and the way that you touch the world. And I'm trying to think a lot about, how do I need to touch the world? What kind of touch, what quality of touch works for me? Figuring out what I need and what my choices are has been really important. But taking lots of time away from screen and going outside has been critical.
And my final question to you, Luke, do you have any advice for people that has a different types of disabilities, the way that you explained to me just then?
Can you say, sorry, Jamie, can you ask that question again? Is there?
So I'm asking, has Luke got any more advice for people that have the most struggle as well?
Yeah. So do you have any advice for people who have different disabilities about how they can say what they need if they're struggling? Is that true? Is that accurate, Jamie?
Yeah, I mean, find your kin, find your people and talk about how, and talk with them about how they've talked about what they need. I don't know whether you work in the field of making work, Jamie, but for example, there's a couple of artists in the UK recently who have started sharing things like access riders. So when they work with organisations, they send information up front about what their needs are. And I think that exercise in itself of just kind of, in fact, Caroline recommended this to me when I first started talking with her about my suspicions around how I was struggling online. She said, well, why don't you start making a little list of the things that are difficult for you and also the things that you might need that would make a difference? And like just doing that exercise for myself and then saying it out loud to a friend and being heard was a really important beginning. And so maybe I would say start with that, is like make a list for yourself and share it with somebody else that you trust, and begin to say those things out loud. I don't know what, Caroline, whether you, what you would add to that.
Yeah, I think we need to be talking about our access and what we need as a fact. Like we don't ask it as a favor. We don't ask it as, yeah, we just kind of go, this is the fact. If you want to work with me, this is how we need to work. And so being really unapologetic about saying what we need, I think is important. And having an access statement, so that says things like, this is the best way to communicate with me. Or if we're in a studio, these are the things that you need to be aware of, or whatever. So there's a company based in Glasgow called Birds of Paradise, and they have a really beautiful access statement template that I could share with you guys if that's useful, that just really allows people to jot in the ways that work best for them, that they can then, it's a bit like this access rider idea, that you can share with people when it feels right for you.
So I might jump to
add,
go Go for it, Luke.
I was just going to add to that, Jamie, to say to Jamie that I worked recently with two artists called Leslie and Claire, who are disabled artists here, who just graduated from the Scottish Contemporary Dance School. And in conversation, they were saying to me, but we're kind of young, and like, can we say what we need? And there's people who know more than us. And I was, you are the expert of your experience, of yourself. Nobody knows you better than you. And only you can say what you need. It's not for other people to tell you. It's for other people to listen.
Yeah.
So just to finish off, there's a couple of questions online, which it'd be nice to kind of get to. So the first one, Luke, I'm going to direct this towards you first of all. It's from Linda. She said, what is your advice for a newly diagnosed disabled person trying to return to dance but unmasked? Dance being a basic need, not choreographed, blah, blah.
I think for me, when Caroline was just talking about her dancing outside, is to find a dance that brings you joy right now. Start for yourself. Start dancing for yourself, for the things that give you pleasure, and what gives you pleasure now. Because this question that we asked of what's the dance this body does now, I feel like that's a dialogue that we've been in for a long time with all the other dance artists and disabled dance artists I've worked with. Is like, my body changes every day. I have to have a conversation with it. But I think starting with what's the pleasure? Where do I find pleasure today? And working out from there is maybe where I would begin.
Yeah. I would just add to that. I think we are very deprived of disability pride in this country, which is why we feel the need to mask if we can, or hide what our access requirements are, where we are today, where's our 100%. And I think there's something about the need to grow our disability pride so that we, and I know that's much easier said than done, but to get to a place where actually we start to think about the very specific and unique perspective that our bodies bring to a space as advantageous rather than as something that takes away from it.
So one final question from Janice Florence.
Hi, Janice.
So Karen, I'll throw this to you first, but it'd be nice to get both of your perspectives on it. It's very simple as a question. How would either of you describe inclusive choreography?
I learned from a fantastic, theatre director based in Edinburgh, David Grieg, who stopped giving character descriptions for the plays that he was writing. He would just give them a name. There was no sense of age or physicality or whatever. He would just give them a name. And he very much talks about he makes for the bodies that are in the room. And I would say that that is very much what I do, and that is my idea of, I think, true inclusive dance is about making for the bodies that are in the room, not, and really exploring and embracing those incredible bodies rather than trying to make those bodies be anything other than what they are. So I think it's about embracing the physicality, the bodies in the space.
And I would, we mentioned our colleague Janice Parker earlier. There was a project that she made many years ago called Take a Look at What's Actually There, which follows on from what Caroline just said. I think, you know, when I'm making my practice about, I work with who's in the room. And if I think about Caroline's falling in love with Frida, how to work with all of our collaborators, how do we fall in love with ourselves? And how do we fall in love with one another when we're making? And I think so often in dance, there's an idea of where people should be striving to get to rather than being with who we are and where we're at. And that being not just enough, but more than enough. When I worked with an ensemble on my last project, we talked about that a lot in the studio, like, you are more than enough. and celebrating your unique knowledge. So that's where, for me, that's where I would begin with inclusive dance.
Brilliant.
Tom, I just spotted there's another question in the chat. Do we have time?
Yeah, go for it. I'm just going to be on screen.
Yeah, great. Take a load off.
This is from Tanya, I believe in Malmo, who says, thank you so much for this talk. Listening to both of you makes one really look forward to your next artistic collaboration. Is that something that you would like to share? Or is there not anything in the pipeline? What would you like to be your next joint project?
Anya is obviously and happily writing a funding application and is hoping we've got some amazing thing up our sleeve. Luke and I cannot not work together. So even though we're on opposite sides of the world, there is still at least three things that we know of this year that we're going to do, but they're quite conversational, right? This
yes,
being one of
but
them.
I did actually put on a piece of paper last night when we asked each other this question of what might we hope for going forward, is that although we have both, so I was text advisor on Falling in Love with Frida, you performed in mine and Joe Verrent's work, Take Me to Bed. We've never made a work together. And it is actually on my list of things I would love for us to do. So I'm going to put that out there. If somebody would like to, and if Caroline would like to invite us to make a work together, I would very much love to do that. And I'm sure we have lots of ideas.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I would happily be in a creative space with you anytime, anywhere.
So that's a commissioning
invitation. Yes, absolutely. We're open to commissions.
And I guess if there are things that in this conversation have been of interest, we are having another conversation in Scotland or with Scottish organisation with Dance Space, who I'm associate artist with, in a couple of weeks' time on Friday, the 19th of March. Between 9 a.m. UK time. I don't know what time it'll be there, will it?
It'll be 8:30.
Yeah. 8 in the evening.
Yeah.
Where we're going to talk about touch being enough and leading with love.
Yeah. Maybe it should be being more than enough. Just based on what you said.
So thank you both. Thank you, Caroline. Thank you, Luke, for the last hour. Thank you also to our wonderful interpreters, Sarah and Michelle, and to Lloyd, our technician, who's been keeping the whole thing going for us, and to both audiences, to those in the room with us here in North Melbourne and those zooming in from all over. If you'd enjoyed this talk and you want to listen to it again or read any of it back, we will post the audio of the talk and a transcription of it on the Lucy Gehrenink website in the next week or so. If you would like to share that with anyone else as well who wasn't able to be here live with us tonight, then please feel free to pass that on so that the wisdom of Caroline and Luke can go further into the world. The next Dance Dialogue will be coming up in April and we'll announce more about that shortly. But before that, if you are in Melbourne and you want to spend some time in a studio with Caroline, she'll be teaching morning class here in a couple of weeks' time, Monday the 15th of March. The classes run from 10 till 11:30 in the morning here in this very studio. So hopefully some of you will be able to come in and join us for that.
That'd be amazing. Come and do some dancing.
Yeah, and more information on that, if you go to the Lucy Gehrenink website and navigate to the calendar, you'll find information about the class there. And that's all from us. So good evening, good morning, wherever you are. Thanks again for joining us and see you all soon.
Thank you so much for coming and being with us.
Thank you.